Good afternoon, everyone. Before our meeting starts, it's a little preliminary things. Everyone has come up here and told me what to do. First of all, they said something about we shouldn't overcrowd the room. So if there's any vacant seats around you and you see anyone coming in, please direct them to a vacant seat. And also, if they said something about some kind of cell phones or something, I don't know anything about that kind of equipment. So you govern yourself accordingly. And something put off the phone. And one guy told me, specific, he has a green shirt on. And it says volunteer on the back of it or the front of it. He said, make sure you announce, because I'm in charge of this room, that no one sits on the floor. I said, well, they can come sit up here with me. Really. So I'm trying to get, we would like to start because all of us have a lot to say. There's going to be, well, quite a few, we have a lot to say, and I won't give people ample time to say it. So that's anything anybody from the floor would like for me to announce while I'm standing here, other than the fact that I look so damn good. Now that's what you call a floor voice. All righty. Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dolores Coford, and I bring you greetings from the Chicago area. And my Alcoholics Anonymous anniversary date is June the 5th, 1963. And since all of that I just said, has nothing to do with the group meeting, we will now begin our meeting with a moment of silence. And this is going to be one of the best international meetings any of you all have ever attended. They gave us the best slot plus the best time because nothing follows us. So I'm like the guy that told me a long time ago prior to my coming into our fellowship. He said that men like him because he speaks his mind, but the women like him because he takes his time. So this is going to be an exciting meeting. Each one of them has 20 minutes. Hopefully, everyone says, they said, be considerate of each other. I know about the consideration of Alcoholics Anonymous amongst ourselves. I'm very familiar with it. So please don't do it the way that I understood and understand how it's being done up in here. So but we have three beautiful, wonderful speakers. I want to make sure I get their names right because I want it right on the tape just in case you don't understand what they're saying. We have a speaker from what they call the Cornhusker State. And for those of us who are in this room who don't know a damn thing, Nebraska is the Cornhusker State. And her name is Lori G. Raise your hand, Lori, because you got to identify, really. Someone said we all look alike. Our second speaker will be Paul M. He's from New York. New York. And we really have a treat for our third sharer. I won't say speaker to her because I often remind her she's not speaking. She's just sharing her experience, strength, and hope. And who is a dear relative of mine, really. And I call her my adopted Alcoholics Anonymous daughter. And that's exactly what she is to me. And her name is Kathy Landy, and she's from the island of Bermuda. So that I can leave a little available time. It's like, y'all know about available time on those charge cards, don't you? The available time for our shares, hopefully I won't have too much other to say. Other than the fact that this is my 10th year international. My first international I attended was in 1965 up in Toronto, Ohio, at the Royal York Hotel, the Maple Leaf Garden Auditorium, where our co-founder declared that we are responsible. And I've been trying to live up to that ever since. So, Lori, you take your time and do what you have to do. Give a big hand for Lori.
Oh, hi. My name is Lori. I'm an alcoholic.
You do what you want with the microphone.
Oh, she says, do what I want with the microphone. I think it's going to do what it wants. Thanks to the grace of God and sponsorship and Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 12 concepts, and the fellowship of you all, I've been sober since March 23rd, 1991. And I want to thank Dolores so much because I tell you what, about a half hour ago, I lost my sense of humor. And thank you for restoring that. She had me going. A half hour ago, my mind went blank. I couldn't remember where I was supposed to go or what I was supposed to talk about. And so I called my sponsor, who is in Nebraska, at a cabin. She answered the phone by saying, I'm busy, aren't you? And I said, I've got an attack of the stupids. Do you have a minute? And so what she said in short, very short, was, it's all your ego. Find a bathroom, get on your knees, and ask God to remove it. Yeah. And I thought, well, this isn't the first time I've been on my knees in front of a toilet in a public bathroom. It was brief. I shouldn't say this. My husband is here. He's kind of a clean freak. Don't look at my knees. But I'm just grateful I'm a woman at the moment. And my prayer, it was brief. It said, God, please remove my ego. And if this doesn't do it, I don't know what will. Amen. And now I'm here. What was the topic? Oh, dear. I grew up in rural Nebraska. I did my worst of my drinking in rural Nebraska. And as I was standing in line in the bathroom, I'm thinking, oh, Lord, this is not very ladylike. And then I thought, oh, yeah, I always thought I was such a lady, you know. My idea of being a lady was don't drink beer. Now, I loved beer. I loved whiskey more. I liked beer. I loved whiskey. Unless the only thing around was rum, then, you know, who cares? I didn't work much. I have a friend who says, I can work, I can drink, I can't do both at the same time. And I understand that. So without much money, without any money in rural Nebraska, getting a drink is not difficult. My MO was I had this special pink skirt and a white top. And I would go into a bar in rural Nebraska. They're all alike. They have a pool table in the back. They have guys playing pinochle starting about 5 o'clock in the front. Those are the ones that are gone by 6:30 because they have one and leave. And then they have, you know, they have the bar on the side. And so I would go back to the pool table in my outfit. I'd say, oh, pool, and put my quarter up. And then make my way back to the bar. And by the time I got there, someone was saying, get her whatever she wants. And because I like beer, and those are the kinds of places that serve beer, but it's unladylike to drink beer, I'd order a double shot of Wild Turkey. Because we all know the beer isn't ladylike. Anyway, so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous full of fear, although I didn't know that. I had done the geographic thing. I'd done the change the man thing. I'd done the change the job thing. You know, when I had one. And on that day in March of 1991, I was out of ideas, out of resources. And even if I'd had some ideas and some resources, I probably didn't have the energy to carry it out. I was just tired. And I thought about what I had heard when I'd attended a few Alcoholics Anonymous meetings a few years earlier. I attended a meeting where they read, they started the meeting with chapter 5. And I thought about, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I thought, well, you know, I probably haven't even been on the same map as wherever that path is. So it's impossible for me to say I tried AA and it didn't work. So I made a phone call that day and thus started my journey into real life, I guess. I didn't think I had any fear. I made it difficult to do a fourth step. I wrote down, I'm supposed to list my fears. I wrote down things like spiders, and then I erased it because I'm not afraid of spiders. I just don't like them. But I had a sense, I'd been to enough meetings, I had a sense that that wasn't really what they were looking for. So I confessed to my sponsor that I didn't have any fears. After all, I'm someone who would get on the back of a motorcycle with a drunk guy I just met at closing time. I'm fearless. And she said, really? Then why do you lie so much? Bingo. Okay. I lie because I'm afraid of what you think about me. I'm afraid that you will know who I really am. I'm afraid that you won't like me if you do find out. And I can't stick around you very long, any of you individually, or you're going to find these things out. And what I have discovered in my years of sobriety is that that was just one manifestation of my fear. My fear has all kinds of manifestations. Sometimes it comes up with new ones. And I think I have a new character defect. And guess what? Wrong. This is the same old one that's taken on a new form and dressed itself up a little different. I was blessed to have the meanest sponsor on the planet. Because I would not have listened to anybody else. She scared me. And while I don't generally think, I try not to scare the women that I sponsor, while it's generally not a good idea, it was an excellent idea for me. Because I was smarter than you. I was, I'd get this thing quick. And she just wasn't going to listen to any of my stuff. That desperation that I told you about that day in March of 91, you know, didn't last very long. Thank goodness I made a phone call while I had it. But, after attending a few meetings, it was like, oh, yeah, I remember now. This is how they do it. And I started spouting the same garbage that I'd always spouted before. But she told me specific things. I knew they didn't have a darn thing to do with staying sober, but I was afraid to tell her that. She told me things like, make your bed every day. She said, do what's in front of you to do. She said, do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. I thought that meant in AA. So when I said I would make coffee for the meeting, I showed up. And then somewhere along the line, she said, no, that's in all areas of your life. When I got sober, I was a single mother of two sons. They were 3 and 6 at the time. And, you know, I never, ever thought about applying that to them. And she said, oh, no, it applies to them, too. Well, shoot. You know, so things started happening, like we'd be driving by a park, and one of them would say, oh, Mommy, can we stop and play in the park? And I'd say, oh, maybe tomorrow. And then it would be like, oh, no. So sometimes it would just be easier to turn around and say, I changed my mind, we'll do it today, because then I wouldn't have to remember tomorrow. The other thing she told me was to answer my phone. If you've gotten sober in the last 5 years, you totally cheated. When I got sober, we didn't have caller ID. Those that had it had to pay for it, and I didn't know anyone with caller ID. I still don't like it. You know, it's like cheating if I look at my phone before I pick it up. It just feels wrong. I never answered my phone, or I'd answer it at the wrong time. You know, I had one of those black phones with the rotary dial, and it would start ringing, and the debate would start in my head. Ooh, I better not answer that. It might be a bill collector. Ooh, I better answer that. It might be my boss checking to make sure I'm really homesick. Ooh, I better not answer that. It might be my mother, and she'll wonder why I'm not at work. Ooh, I better answer that. It might be him. Ooh, I better not answer that. It might be his wife. And then the phone would quit ringing, and I'd think, shoot, I bet I should have answered that. So my sponsor told me things like, answer your phone, no matter what. Answer your phone. That was terribly difficult. But all those things just contributed to my willingness, opportunities to become a better person, you know? Those just basic little things. I still don't make my bed. I got married and he does it. But that wasn't very nice, was it? I didn't make my bed until I was about 13 years sober. And suddenly, when I started making my bed, my housekeeping problems went away. Isn't that something? I told you, I thought the things she had to tell me didn't have anything to do with staying sober. But I was afraid to tell her that. Well, there was another gal she sponsored, and I heard this gal, after a meeting, say to her, that doesn't have anything to do with staying sober. I'm like, yeah, you go. And I listened very closely, and I heard my sponsor say, now, how would you know? So I never asked that question ever. I mentioned those children, you know, and I mentioned doing what's in front of me to do. Sometimes, you know, I would just be freaked out. I'd call my sponsor. I'd say, you know, I'd be freaked out about something. She'd say, clean your oven. It was something in front of me to do. One time I said, I haven't used the oven since the last time you told me to clean it. And then I was put on toilets. So, why did I tell you that? I don't even know. I got toilet on the brain now. Great. I hear more now, rather than do what's in front of you to do, I hear more about take the next right action. And I believe strongly in that. But I think we have to be careful when we tell that to new people. Because the issue is the next right action according to whom. And if I don't have a conscious contact with a higher power, then the next right action may not be right according to someone else's standards. One thing I have learned is Lori's standards don't get her very far. I'll give you an example of that. When my boys were teenagers, I guess every mother goes through this, I don't know. But at about age 16, my older son and I had gotten in this big fight. I was over the edge angry. He was over the edge angry. We were standing at the top of the stairs, and I got the typical teenager right in the face, I hate you, you don't understand me. And I threw that little brat down the stairs. In my head. What happened was truly phenomenal. I found myself saying, it really hurts me to hear you say that. I hope you know that I love you. And I turned around and walked away. And that is absolutely as a result of a relationship with God. I went in and... I sat on my bed and wondered what just happened. It was some kind of like out-of-body experience. And that is... that I have little snippets like that where God takes over for me when I can't handle it. And all I have to do is ask. And I generally say please because that's what God's grace is. It's an undeserved gift. And if I'm going to ask for something undeserved, the least I can do is say please. And on that note, I thank you.
Thanks, Lori. My God, I never cease to amaze what we hear in our fellowship. I'm trying to find out the difference when you say that you didn't have much money or any money. So I really am, but thank you for sharing. And I certainly appreciate your beer experience, really. Because during my drinking career, beer made my kidneys unmanageable. And I'd lived long enough for they done got just like they were before I got in here. So now, our next wonderful, good-looking, handsome share. You take my breath away. It's Paul, not only... does he speak his mind? He takes his time.
Get this microphone some Viagra here, my God. Not that I know anything about that sort of stuff. I'm just going what other people have told me, you know. My name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Paul!
And it's good to be here, and it's good to be sober, and, I mean, it's a blessing to be here today, and I want to welcome you all to the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome you to the International Convention, and I would be remiss here if I didn't welcome all my friends from New York that are here today. We're darn near having a wonderful time, and because of Alcoholics Anonymous, none of us have been arrested so far, you know, and we're really having a good time, and I don't know if I'm hot or I'm nervous or is the air conditioning on. I didn't realize that San Antonio in July was only 3 miles from the sun, you know, and, you know... If I had to realize that, you know, I brought my dental records with me, you got to identify, just be a pool of sweat and a paisley tie up here at the end, you know. Oh, thanks for sharing, keep coming back, you know. It's an honor to be asked to speak at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's indeed a privilege to be asked to come here today, and if there's any non-members of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're welcome to meeting of AA. You know, my wife's a non-member of Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, I thought that microphone was for her there in the middle of the room, you know, that she can get up and do a bit of a rebuttal after I spoke, you know. I spoke at a meeting one night and she was with me and we were driving home. She said, that guy you were talking about, I'd really like to meet him someday, you know.
Yay! Yeah.
Can you bring him over to the house? He sounds like a wonderful guy, you know? I give her the old AA. Well, we stay there, stays there, we leave there. All right? I can't expect you to know the traditions. That's the way they go, you know? I'd like to tell you a little bit about how it was and what happened and how it is today. And hopefully by about 6:30, quarter to 7, I should be wrapping it all up, you know. I'm glad there's no meetings coming behind this one. And as you probably realize, I'm not from the neighborhood originally, you know. And it's about 25 years now since I left my native Cuba. And I always run that line out at meetings, and the inevitable happened one day. A guy came up to me and he says, my name is Jorge and I'm from Cuba, you know. I'm trying to think, what's Spanish for live and let me live, you know. And I have to welcome, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my home group. A lot of them are here from the High Noon group in Long Beach, New York, you know. Now, it's not just noon, it's high noon, you know, 12 o'clock high, Grace Kelly, you know, Gary Cooper. We have two meetings a week. One's at 7:15 on a Thursday night, the other one's at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning. It gives you some idea where my home group is coming from, you know. We've sort of carved out a notch for ourselves at the lower end of the AA gene pool, you know. And we're very happy there, you know. And there's alcoholism in my family. There's mental illness in my family. My family's like Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night. Alcoholism and mental illness. And I used to get a lot of, you know, why did I become an alcoholic? Were they become an alcoholic? You know, there's a friend of mine, Patty, says, you know, what came first, the chicken or the keg, you know, and all that. There's a few alcoholics that got drunk trying to figure that one out, you know, and all I know is when I took my first breath, I blew a .28, you know what I mean? They should have taken me from the delivery room and brought me to my first meeting of AA, you know, and give them a white chip there, the guy in the bassinet, you know. Was I a symptom looking for disease? I don't know, but I took the booze like a duck to water. You see, I drank because of a lack of. There's something missing in me. I don't know what it was. You know, for whatever reason, I don't know, I ended up with a hole in my soul. You talk about character building. I try to fill it with all the wrong stuff. I try to fill it with booze and people and places and things. And every victory that I had before I came to AA was purely symbolic. The only time that I started to fill that hole in my soul was through the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Building character and sobriety, I can sum that up in 1 minute. You want to build character and sobriety, you do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. It's that simple. You want to continue building character and sobriety, take somebody else through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when you talk about you, I find about me. Nobody unique in here. I'm a garden variety drunk. I'm mostly immature. I had a lot of growing up to do. You know, and for a while, booze worked. Don't get me wrong, it worked. You know, but it became, I ended up that place that talks about in the big book, the jumping off place. I couldn't live with drink, and I couldn't live without drink. By drinking alcoholic and denying it, I created a world even I couldn't live in. We know the old story, booze give me the wings to fly. And then it took away the sky. You know, when I come in here and I've got nothing. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps of AA, I got something. And something beats nothing every day of the week and twice on Sunday because of AA. And I got to get, if you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to get something between me and the first drink or I will always drink again. An alcoholic of my variety, I'll back myself into a corner. My life will become unmanageable, unbearable. It's either take a drink or go off a roof. Most alcoholics take a drink, you know, and I'm glad that I found AA. Most alcoholics die drunk. They don't even get to AA. Talk about building character. I bartended the last 5 years drinking the first 12 years in sobriety. Let me tell you something. Most alcoholics die drunk. We're only a small percentage that got here and stayed here and here today. And what are we here? We're here carrying this message. This message. My message might even keep me sober. This message. When Bill Wilson had that blessed idea, I wonder if I can stay sober by trying to help another alcoholic get sober. And Bill went looking for Bob, and then went looking for another guy. And we can trace this moment in time back to that moment in time. Bill Wilson had a vision when he lay in Towns Hospital of a chain of drunks around the world, not around New York. A whole paradigm shift, one alcoholic helping another. And that's my building character. That's my 10th step. How strong is my link today? It's as strong to the people that came behind me, and it's as strong to the people going ahead of me. So if someone comes up to me and says, Paul, can I go to that place that you talk about? Can I experience peace and happiness and serenity? Can I no longer regret the past and I wish to shut the door on it? Can I go there? Absolutely. Take my hand and walk this journey with us. We're all on this journey together. Sobriety is a journey. It's not a destination. It's a process, not an event. You know, when we're here. And that's why a little bit of alcohol. I'm here. There's people in this room I've never met before. I don't need to know you're... All I need to know is you're an alcoholic, and I know enough. I know enough. I don't... Gender, color, creed. When you tell me you're an alcoholic, I know enough. I know you've experienced terror, frustration, bewilderment, and despair. I know you put a drink to your lips as the tears roll down your face. You drank it anyway. I know here's a bit about smashing self-esteem. I know you sat and you drank against your own will. And that's where I was, sitting in an apartment, drinking around the clock against my own will. My mother and father are 3,000 miles away in Ireland, and I'm saying to myself, I'll never see them again. And if you ask me why I got to where I was, I just wanted a few drinks to take the edge off. And then you try not drinking. You know, it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not drink. The first half of the first step talks about not drinking. My problem is alcoholism. A drinking problem is solved by not drinking alcohol. But I suffer from a horse of a different color. It's alcoholism. That's my problem. It's physical, and it's mental, and it's spiritual. And it's wrapped up in a body full of warped emotions. It says in the big book, a bottle's about a symbol. My problems are my own making. And I stop drinking. My life doesn't get better. It gets worse. Because I end up with me on me. And I can't get me off of me. And I'm on me 24/7. And what's alcoholism? It's the inability to maintain and sustain personal relationships. I'm on the outside looking in. I'm separating myself from you and from him and from me. And I'm sitting there, nobody understands. And even in a place like New York City that's teeming with people, I'm walking down the street and I feel so alone and so desolate of spirit and so bereft of anything with dealing with humanity that I might as well be walking on the moon. And I want to grab somebody and say, you know what, I'm not drinking. And it's terrible. They tell me not to drink, and I'm not drinking, and it's terrible. I don't want to, and I take a drink, I don't want to drink myself into a restraining sheet. I don't want to get locked up. I don't want to have convulsions and seizures. I just want half a dozen drinks to take the edge off. The only thing that puts color in my life is a half a dozen drinks. Without booze, my life's just black and white, and it's drab, and it's dreary. But I got a body that won't let me drink and a mind that won't let me stop. One drink creates a thirst I can't quench. I take one drink, it's Russian roulette again. I don't know where I'm going to end up. It's a crapshoot. And my life's totally out of control when I take a drink. I heard a guy say to me one time, he said it's like being in a speeding car that's out of control. And you reach for the steering wheel and there is none. That's what the end of this disease is like. And you're out of options. And I was out of options. And by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I ended up in a meeting of AA. And this is the last thing I tried and the first thing that ever worked. I tried every other way of stopping drinking. I came in here because my problem is alcoholism. Not drinking is not enough. The first half of the first step, Bill Wilson says, it's a start, but it's just a brief start. I need more than that. I got to get something between me and the first drink. You know, and it can be, if you're new here today, if you can work. We have a symbol in AA. You've seen it probably all around the place. It's a triangle inside a circle. And I believe you can work all three parts of that triangle from the first day you walked into the meeting of AA. Unity. I need this. We stay sober, I get drunk. Many meetings make it easy, few make it hard, and none make it impossible. AA does not deliver. It's not Pizza Hut. I got to get here for the message. service. I had to learn to function for the well-being of another person besides myself. I had to get out of self. I'm shackled to self by the very biochemistry of this disease. The alcoholic is shackled to self. The handcuffs of alcohol are taken off, but also the bondage of self must be relieved. One alcoholic helping another. And then I must get into the recovery, unity, service, and recovery. You might say the steps are all foreign. We have slogans here, live and let live, one day at a time, easy does it. They were like the banisters to the steps for me. So I believe in the first minute you walk into AA, you can start building character because you can work all three parts of that triangle. And if you're working all three parts of that triangle, you have as much right. You're participating in your own recovery. It's your miracle. The least you can do is participate in it. And we're all miracles here today. They told me a miracle is a complete reversal or upheaval of the laws of nature. It's in my nature to be lying drunk somewhere right now, and I'm not. Now, how did that happen? It didn't happen because of me. It happened because of used people. We're in this, it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're in this lifeboat together. We've survived from the sinking ship. And we're all here together. And what do? Do we sail off into the sunset, patting each other in the back? No. We circle, looking for more survivors, and help them up into the boat. As far as I'm concerned, building up character is helping another alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous, whether a newcomer, it's just a room full of noise. It makes no sense to me. The whole program is predicated on helping the next alcoholic. I believe sobriety is like a backwater pond. It needs fresh water. If it doesn't get fresh water, it becomes stagnant. And nothing grows in stagnant water. I die, you die, we all die. What's the point? And I learned these things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came in here, I was still stinking with barroom mentality. I tried to work the first half of the first step. And I tried to, I was my problem. I'm always looking for an outside fix for what's really an inside job. And I carried that thinking into AA. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't owe much money. Within 2.5 years, I was thousands upon thousands of dollars in debt. I was still trying to fill the hole in my soul. There's not enough stuff out there to fill the hole in my soul. I would buy a new suit, I'd feel good for 20 minutes. But I always end up back at that equation, me on me. I go to the Caribbean for a few days, I feel good. I always end up back at me on me. I need those. It's not an option for me. We don't do the steps because they're nice. We do them because they're necessary for recovery. If you want to get physically and mentally and spiritually and emotionally rehabilitated, I have to work this program. I know of no other way, and I've tried every other way. You know, and I carried that thinking into AA about 2.5 years off drink. And I thought I was doing the deal. I was going to plenty of meetings. Service, I said, I'm making more coffee than Juan Valdez. You kidding me, service? Guys said to me, what about recovery, Paul? I was walking around here, and I found the hard way. You can fool them at 7:30 at night, the coffee pot, I've done it. Everything's wonderful. It's off in the teeth out. And I'm lying there awake with the could-haves and the should-haves and the would-haves, and it's one more night without sleep. Because I haven't met an alcoholic yet that was pathological. I know right from wrong, and I'm full of guilt and shame and remorse, and this stuff's coming up. And you see, what happened before when this stuff comes up? What I used to do, I got a bottle of Bushmills whiskey, and I went back down again. It comes up, I get another bottle of whiskey. But now I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, so there's no hiding place. And this stuff's coming up, and a guy said to me, Paul, it's going to choke you. And the spiritual apparatus that we use to get rid of it is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like a starving man at a spiritual banquet. All this food was an offer, and I'm over in the corner living on bread and water, telling you I'm all right. And the guy said to me, Paul, you're not. You're dying. And you're dying from the inside out of untreated alcoholism. And that man saved my life. Because you're out of options. And I was out of options in AA. And I got into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to build character. Take on long-term goals and chip away at them one day at a time. Whether it be sobriety, halfway decent mental health, getting a job, being responsible, being accountable, being dependable. These were all things that were foreign of my nature as an active alcoholic. I learned to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a teenager in a man's body. 30 years of age to come in here. You know, one day. And I tell you when great events came to pass in my life. When I started to help other people and take them through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's when my life took on new meaning. That's when great events came to pass in my life. And Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to take on. I come into AA. I was 32 years of age, 2.5 years off drink. I didn't even have a high school diploma. And AA gave me the ability to go back to school. I went from being a high school dropout to being a high school teacher. That only happens in here. It only happens in here. You cannot get where I am today from where I came from without AA. There's a guy, Frank M., set up in New York. And I'm going to end on the story because talk's cheap. I was leaving for this convention on Thursday evening. I came home from work and I see my wife walking up and down the street. And I said to her, "What's wrong?" She says, "The dog's been lost since 11 o'clock this morning." I didn't want to tell you. I figured we'd find him. And my daughter's 5 years of age, another blessing in sobriety, and she's distraught because she left the door open. And we're walking about, and we meant to leave for the airport. And my ego's saying, "Get in the car, get in the car, get in the car. Never mind the dog, get in the car." And I said to myself, "What am I going to do? I could get in the car and leave my 5-year-old daughter standing crying on the sidewalk and come down here and tell you people about building character and sobriety?" Is this about looking good and sounding good? No. I made the phone call. I canceled my reservation. I said, "I'm going to have to call the guys from GSO. This is one phone call I don't want to make." So I tried to book a flight for Friday. We found the dog later on. Someone had brought him to the shelter. And it's not about the dog. It's about me being part of my family life with my 5-year-old daughter. And I called up and my wife says, "I feel really bad. And there was no flights on Friday." And she said, "Why don't you check Saturday morning?" I said, "There's no way I'll get there in time." She said, "Take a look." I go on the internet. There's one seat left on Saturday morning. I said, "What two flights, there's weather, what if this?" I just got down on my knees this morning at 4 o'clock. I handed it all over. I got in the car. I drove to the airport. And like clockwork, I was here. Because... I found out the hard way that when you're doing God's will, obstacles are not removed. They just don't exist. They just don't exist. And God got me here to do what it's meant to do, to share experience, strength, and hope with huge people, because it's not about me. And my wife and daughter's home, and the dog's fine, everybody's fine. I tried to find that way of life in a bar, and I didn't find it. I looked for that in whiskey, and I couldn't find it. I found out how to live one day at a time, how to grow up and be responsible and accountable and dependable, to be there for other people in AA. And we have to be there, because when the family and the friends are standing around the bed and they don't know what to do or who to call, I am responsible. When they say, "Who will go?" my hand has to go up and say, "I will go." I mightn't be chosen, but I better be willing to go. And that's what AA taught me, to function for another person besides myself, to come down here, because it's not about me. And listen, it's a blessing. I want to wish you all safe travels home. It's been an honor to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And that's all I'll say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul. Thanks. 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 Developing character. Our next sharer would be my dear adopted daughter. I've been trying to remember her name. Kathy Landy from the island of Bermuda.
Good. Hello, family. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Kathy. And I'm truly grateful to be able to share because someone didn't show up. And when called to do something in these rooms, well, I wasn't called. I was told. I'm from the island of Bermuda. How many of you have heard of Bermuda, especially from New York? We are 22 square miles long, 2 miles wide. Per capita, we have the most churches, liquor houses, and golf courses. So you get up, go to church, go to golf, get drunk. I have been in this fellowship. Well, I came in 87 and didn't stay because I wasn't as bad as you people. But my sobriety date is June the 4th, 1991. This is my fourth international. I am very, very grateful that we have a convention. We follow the rules that was laid out by Dr. Bob and Bill at Thanksgiving time. We have a convention. And in 93, Clancy and Francine were speaking. And with the entourage came the Doloreses from Chicago. It was one black, one white. The white one has passed. And I had reached a point in my sobriety for 2 years. And I was sitting there by myself. And I said, these people are full of crap. And here comes this woman. I was sober. I was just going through a phase which I call the grand efforts, you know. And here comes this woman. What you doing sitting over there by yourself? And from then came a relationship which is, I can say, divinely inspired. It's very testing. Yeah. I'm honest. And she exposed me to the International Women's Conference from 94 to 2004. We never missed. This thing of character building. I drove taxi, and I still drive bus. Public bus in Bermuda. We take school to kids and everything. And through intervention, in 87, they sent me a 2-year program. And when I finished, I continued to drink. I couldn't wait to finish. And I went and bought me a six-pack and a flask. And then the next week, I got a gallon and a case. And I was still going to meetings because you had to have those chips lying. And the person talked about it being a progressive disease. So I decided when they sent me back in 91 that I would try one day at a time. I have a son, he got knocked down when he was 7, and he lost his right hand. And I had the opportunity in 91 to travel to Philadelphia, to the Shriners. And my first year in the fellowship, I met a fellow. I was a greeter at the door. And my sponsor said, well, you're traveling, make sure you get to an AA meeting. I walked around the corner, and all these people of the other expression were standing there staring at me. And I didn't realize at that time that I had walked through one of the hardest places. I thought they were scared of me because I was black. And they said, well, they know God was with me because nobody walks, if your expression, through this area. And there was Bob. And he was off of a hand injury and was able to take me to meetings all over the place. I can truly share that recovery for me was very, very hard. I had the experience of people who come off the cruise ships, and I remember a fellow saying to me, because I still didn't drink, but I still had it in the back of my mind that this is not for me. I read every piece of literature because I wasn't as bad, and I found out that I was worse. I'm one of the few women that had laid down on the street with no top teeth. Remember when I went to? I went to Nebraska, Omaha, for this women's conference, and I didn't have no top teeth, and the first thing I ordered was steak. Well, shows you I'm not well. I must apologize, first of all. I was late, because I still don't follow directions properly. I got on the wrong trolley. Then I had to urinate. Then I had to go. So I said, well, I'm coming here. I'm late. But anyhow, when in going through knowing that I really didn't want this program, and after 19 years, I adore this fellowship. You're all my family, my brothers and sisters. I bought pieces of girl because I wasn't sure I was going to stay here, and I had to might have get something to push away to pass on. And I still did that. I did a lot of things. In my island, this fellow came, as I was saying, he came off this cruise ship, and I was sharing because I was told to volunteer. Every Thursday afternoon, you find me at the outpatients workshop meeting. I did that there for many years. I did service work in the prisons. And this fellow came and he said, I said, you don't realize it's very hard. I'm not drinking, but it's very hard not to drink in this island. I would still order a Coke and ginger beer to look like the black woman ginger beer. But he said, there's ocean all around you. Do you drink that? I said, your mother, yeah. You go in the store and there's Clorox. Do you drink that? So I finally got to understand what not drinking one day at a time was. If you can't make it a whole day, you made it a half a day, I was told. If you can't make it a half a day, you take it an hour at a time. And through the grace of God and the fellowship and good sponsorship, I'm here today. And sharing a bit of what it was like for me, As I said, I drove a bus. I am in my island of 22 square miles, everybody knows everybody. And if I passed your house and there were three or four cars, they were having a party and forgot to invite me. So I would show up and I would be the last to leave. And I know a lot of people in my island. I know practically everybody. As I said, with the Dolores's and being introduced to the Women's Conference, that was the beginning of my road to happy trudging this adventure, this journey. I am truly, truly grateful because as I think back, it was about change. And everything, see, well, Ireland, we get tired of hearing our own stories. And this man said, if you have your watch on your left hand, you wear your watch on your right hand. He said, if you put your socks on first, you put your underwear on first. Now, I said, what the hell did I got to do with drinking? But I did it. Because what had happened to me during that stage of 91, every 3 days I ended up going to a funeral. Everybody was kidney failure. Somebody stepped in front of somebody. Like, the Lord killed all these people. And I got to live. And learning, you see, because when they said about a God of my understanding, well, when I came from the church, well, I almost got to them. My mother died at 11. I went to take her place in the choir. And, you know, being confirmed, I was there early. And so I would drink some of the wine and pour some of the water already in it. So by the time everybody got communion, it was well watered out. And me and the minister got at it and everything else. And having to make an amends to a minister ain't too sharp. But I did that there. And I didn't know that something was wrong with me. You know, everybody drank. I didn't know anybody that didn't drink. I didn't know anyone that didn't drink. And in talking of change, a couple of people from my hometown, if they hear me standing here, I was remembering, I was never asked to share from the podium for a long time. And it, but in all those words, was after that, I spoke perfect French. I was meant to be a boy. These things just grew, you know. So I outdrank all the fellas. And I was, once I said, I was one of the few women that have laid down on the street. And my sponsor asked me what I had to be grateful for. I said, I'm grateful that they stepped up. No, I said, I'm one of the few women that's laid on the streets. And they stepped over me. She said, well, you better be grateful they didn't step on you. And for myself,
I am in trying to live this new life, because each day is a new beginning. I have traveled. The only traveling I did was in front of the Travel Channel, so that I can be the first in the bar to tell them that I went to Switzerland, I went skiing. And I take the magnifying glass so I can see the names on the street to make sure, you know, that, you know, I was a good liar at that time. And do you know that I can share with you, because in gratitude, my job and the government and the union, they had a program together. And in my gratitude, rather than move upward in the management part, I went towards the union. In 2002, I traveled. I got an international position with the union. And I just came back. Before coming here, I got back home on Sunday from Canada and from another union meeting. And I was lucky I was not the one that went to the G20 in Toronto. But I traveled. I had the opportunity to go in 2006, to South Africa. I've been to Germany, I've been to Belgium, and I go to London 3 times a year. At the first trip going to London was the hardest, a 7.5-hour flight. But the times that, you know, I always carry a grapevine. I'm a grapevine bumper. It's a small book. When you're in the line to the bank, the lines, to keep my mind occupied, because I was so sick when they said to get a devotion book, I had 14. I was extreme, as they said, well, use them in the bathroom. No one else could get in the bathroom because I had to read these 14 devotion books. I then, the next year, decided I would separate it. I would have 7 in the morning and 7 at night, you know. But it was just what I needed for the time to stick and stay. I sponsor quite a few. I have been backed off here recently for health issues and with all my traveling, but I try to carry the AA message wherever I go. As I said with Dolores, she encouraged me to travel to all and to read all. And when we met Dr. Bob's wife and Dr. Bob's son, he just passed, and going to the trustees, and to realize that this fellowship last night, that flag ceremony, you got the people, we got more flags than the United Nations, you know, and we all belong to a fellowship that I don't think Bill Wilson realized how worldwide that this is. I, in building character, I was told, and this, oh, this, the big book's a bit different, but page 449, my sponsor always told me, acceptance, because, you know, these people, everything, I don't know, I didn't look at the time when I started, because I broke my watch, and the other watch I just left, and the crap happens to me, it just happens. Now, and I had 2 knee operations, you know, and I think when the doctor told me that I used to play football, I looked at him, me, with my little dainty figure, went up and down off the ball, I don't think so. But I think it was God's way of having, when I fell down a lot, it's just that I lost my balance, you know. And I think it was God's way of having me get off my knees. So I need a knee replacement. I'm scared as hell I won't do it. Face everything and recover, or after everything and run. Of course, I'm after everything and run with my knee. So in coming here, you know, it was very difficult with the pain of my knee. And lost my train of thought that time, but that's the thoughts of being in this fellowship. The I can't really explain, because I have one son, as I say. When he was 7 years old, he got knocked down and was 17 days unconscious. And when they had amputated his hand, they had to soak his hand in, I don't know how much proof it was, alcohol, but he knew not to put his hand in there, because I had to walk to the hospital, and that was my shot to get me going, because it wasn't working in '84. And I was like Roger Rabbit when you took that first shot, and you're and then, you know, whatever. Then any normal person would not have done those things. But in coming into this fellowship, My son now has three beautiful sons, and they all want to be around me. You know, my job, I have people who put their trust in me. I've been on the job 25 years thanks to this fellowship. With my union, we now are trying to develop drug policies in a lot of the workplaces. So it's not about really my anonymity. I try not to, but as I said, my island is so small, 68,000. This is the population of my island right here. You know, my gratitude comes in because my sponsors, they worked hard with me. I really didn't, for someone that didn't want this fellowship, I changed dramatically. You know, I can remember showing up and just doing what was required. At that time, we had cops. You had to wash the cops. The cigarette things, you had to wash those things out. Today, everything, I just get very perturbed when you see so many cigarette butts all over the place. Whereas we could just save the cops and just throw the butts into the cops. And, you know, it's just a simple thing. And I learned that in Philadelphia when they had to tend the coffee tin outside to say, just put it in there. It's a lot of things like that, but you have to accept the things you cannot change. You can't change everybody. And I tried like hell to change a lot of these motherfucking these people. That's been very good. But coming up here and trying to share on a call-out manner, I feel so grateful because I'm one of the few that made it. A lot of my friends and drinking buddies just didn't make it. You know, all the odds were against me. I had a fellowship with a God of my understanding in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, whereas I was the only black woman in a lot of the meetings. And some of them, they didn't mean to, but they'd start here, so I'd sit right next to the speaker. And they'd go right around the room, and when they come back to me, oh, we don't have enough time. They knew I was ready to swear or whatever it is. Right? But in learning, I learned tolerance. I learned patience. I learned to listen. I learned what worked. And when one woman said about, well, you know, when she went back out there, she hid her liquor in the fireplace or she sewed the sleeve of her coat. I said, not me. I put that bottle right on the table. I didn't care what I even drove bus. Everybody was, if you didn't have any bus fare, you just bring me a shot or something. You know, get on board, you know. And that was my life. That was my life. Today, I can't tell you, standing from this side and looking down, it's so beautiful. You know, we're all so happy. And it just really took me aback is what I was going to say, half the things he was going to say, because step 10 is what really worked for me. In living one day at a time, you continue to take personal inventory. You know what I mean? And in page 449, acceptance is the answer to all my beliefs today. You know, and that's how I'm able to stick and stay. And I thank you all, because especially for Dolores here, she's very humble. She never used to stand up 5 years ago. She tell you, if you ask her how when she come in the program, she tell you from the first day to now. She has showed me also with the changes and in character building, I'm honest today. I got that from a long while back on my thank goodness to my grandmother. And she always used to buy me something nice. And that's where I always like surprises. So when she went in the kitchen, I put my hand in this little paper bag because she said it was mine and don't look in it. And there was a mouse trap, you know. So I caught my little finger. And she was around the corner. And she said, did you look into the bag? No! I didn't even have enough strength to pull it off. And I often remember that because that was my whole life, even drinking. You know, don't tell me don't do something, because I'm going to do it. You know, and this is where, in this fellowship, I've had to try to moderate and change. It's about that change. It's about the rewards coming from this change. I'm jumped all over the place because I didn't write down enough, and I just prayed and asked the Lord to guide me. You understand? But where I have come from, there's no top teeth. They said I became spiritually fit. I already tried. I didn't let those left ones. I think I'm just getting so good up here. It's wonderful. But with no teeth, you know. And then I go down there, and I ordered steak. In Nebraska, the beef pump, the beef. I was in Nebraska in 95. I went to Oceanside, so I was going to tell him when I first started, when he said he felt a little hot. Welcome, you know, that's how the hot flashes go. You know? Yeah. So he got a little experience of that. You know, but in reading the literature and sharing with each other, that's how we build our characters. And by keep coming back. And by sharing our experiences in everything we do. Some people think, though, well, that's not whatever. You can't keep this or I can't keep a focused thought. But God knows. He has many names. And this is what this fellowship is all about. You know, many mansions, too. I don't know about that just yet, but I'm just trying to live one day at a time. But I thank you all for listening. This has been a great conference, and I hope you enjoy the rest of it. And don't forget to come to Bermuda anytime around the Thanksgiving. Thank you.